The program we are listening to is Like It Is, a radio public affairs presentation. On the phone with me today is Julia Butterfly. You've no doubt heard the expression becoming one with nature. On today's program, we'll take you to California and share with you a remarkable story about a woman whose effort to save a tree gives real meaning to the expression becoming one with nature. We take you to California via telephone to speak with Julia Butterfly Hill. Now, tell our listeners, how did a young lady from Arkansas find her way up a tree 180 feet above ground?
Well, I was involved in a car wreck August of 96. My timing, when you live in a tree, time tends to disappear. August of 96, and it really inhibited my ability to function as a normal human being. I began stuttering, I stumbled, I had many problems with just living daily life. And close to a year later, I was released from my last doctor in rehabilitation, and I felt very compelled that we should definitely live every moment to its fullest and enjoy just being alive, but that we should also recognize that what we do in the moment affects the future. And so I thought I was going on a spiritual journey around the world to decide where my place in life was, where I could live each moment to the fullest and enjoy being alive, but use that moment to help make this world a better place for all life. And that journey led me out west with some friends, and when I entered the Redwood Forest for the first time, I was overwhelmed with the amount of life and spirituality and power that can exist within a forest that's over 2,000 years old. And it amazed me so much that I felt this immediate connection to what life is about, how all of life is connected. And a few weeks later, I found out that these incredible forests were being destroyed, that forest that no man can ever replicate, that no human can ever grow, was being destroyed because of the company Pacific Lumber under Charles Hurwitz, Houston-based Maxam Corporation. And when I found this out, I felt compelled that I must do something to help make people aware of what is happening and use that awareness as a way to stop the destruction and bring balance back to our society. And I didn't know what I was going to be doing, but I knew that I needed to be doing something. And an amazing series of events led me to this tree where I learned how to climb and climbed up to sit in this 6x8 platform that's hung by ropes from the branches. And I began talking to the world and just telling them about the balance and about the web of life that we're all a part of. And now I find myself here 9 months later.
Let me ask you about your living accommodations. Please describe just a normal day in the normal life of a young lady sitting in a tree for the past 9 months. Has it been difficult, and what has been some of the challenges to living in a tree?
Well, my platform, as I stated, is a 6x8 living platform. That's where I eat, sleep, work, study, research, write letters, write poetry, all the different things, interviews like I'm doing now, all of it I do from my 6x8 platform. Then there are branches of Luna that come through the middle of the platform, and then there's another 4x8 platform, 4 feet by 8 feet, that holds my supplies such as water, extra food, tarps, ropes, things of that nature. And then the whole platform is covered in tarps, and that's my home. And there has been many difficulties. In the beginning, a lot of the difficulties was getting past the technology that had been ingrained in my system. In becoming one with nature, a human that has lived in a technological society has to let go of things like heaters and air conditioners and our attachments to that. Because when we live as we are supposed to, as one with nature, then we, our body's immune system and health becomes balanced with the flow of the seasons. And things such as heaters and air conditioners disrupt that balance. So in the beginning, some of the hardest things was dealing with the extreme wet and extreme cold. Another thing that was very, very difficult, that was much more difficult than any of the physical things I had to deal with up here, was being in the middle of a timber harvest plan. And that is their term for a logging operation on this hillside, on their land. And I was in the middle of trees crashing into the ground all around me at the hands of men holding 7-foot chainsaws, because these trees are so big that they've come up with technology that can take them down in a few hours instead of what they should be doing, which would take days upon days to cut trees these big, so that humans have the respect that we need for trees that make it to 2,000 years old, or such as the tree I'm sitting in that's around 1,000 years old. And that was very difficult for me because I'm on a very steep, unstable hillside. I'm right next to a mudslide that began New Year's morning of 97 and completely destroyed 7 homes in the town of Stafford below me. And the mudslide happened as a direct result of the destructive logging practices of this company. And so to sit through a timber harvest plan, I had to watch these incredible ancient trees that should never be cut smashing into the ground, knowing that as each one fell, the ability of this hillside to hold itself up became less and less, and the lives of the people in the town of Stafford and the lives of the species that require these forests to intact to call it home were being threatened and potentially destroyed.
Well, let me ask you, Julia, at what point does your rights as a citizen to protest supersede or interfere with a company's rights or rights to cut down and cut down trees? Are you at this particular point in time beyond those rights of the individual protester?
Absolutely not. Private property has no right to destroy the quality of our lives. Society has forgotten that. They've allowed other people, a government that is supposed to represent the quality of our lives, and big businesses and corporations to come in and begin taking over our lives and destroying it because they deem it fit. Corporations were brought into existence in our country with an average citizen having the right to revoke the charter of that corporation if they went above and beyond the guidelines of a corporate status, which include destroying the land and the quality of people's lives. Furthermore, this company has violated the laws already in existence over 250 times in 3 years, and yet our government consistently allows them to blatantly break the laws. Therefore, I wouldn't have to be in this tree placing my life on the line and putting myself in danger to try and help people understand the connection if our government would simply enforce the laws already in existence, let alone bring about new laws that would provide true quality for the planet and for our lives.
And let me ask you, Julia, how long are you prepared to stay in Luna? That's the tree that you are currently in. How long are you prepared to stay there?
Well, I'm a very spiritual person, and I pray every day asking for guidance, asking to be the best person I can be, not only in my actions, but my words and my thoughts. And my prayer asking for guidance led me to the tree, and I know that my prayer asking me for when I'm asking for guidance will help lead me down. And I don't know when that time comes, but as long as I'm up here, I'm going to continue sharing this message with people about how incredible and beautiful and powerful it is to live in love and respect for all life.
I was struck reading the article, this information I received on you, about how one night in a storm, it got really bad, and you said in your writing, I believe, if I'm getting it correctly, that you were frightened and you were very afraid, and the tree reassured you and seemingly spoke with you to tell you to hold on, that everything would be all right. And let me ask you, is Luna part of your support system, or are there others who help to make up this support system for you?
Well, Luna is most definitely a support system. All of life is a support system. Society over time has forgotten that fact. We've severed our roots with our connection with the earth, our support system. But above and beyond that, I also have an incredible support team that over time has hiked me supplies up this incredibly steep mountain where I lower down a rope with a bag in it, attached to it, I'm sorry, and they place the supplies in it and I pull it up. They help with media outreach and community outreach. And they also worked every step of the way to help stop the logging, destructive logging practices that are happening on the 200,000 acres of Pacific lumber.
Do you feel that eventually you'll have to come down and that Luna will eventually be cut down? And if that happens, how will you feel?
Well, Luna is marked for cut. That's why we placed this platform up here. We are still working very strongly trying to get the company to agree to save Luna and enough of the surrounding area necessary to hold her on this hillside up. As of yet, those efforts have not been successful. I am the eternal optimist, though. I believe that we cannot expect a future that we do not foresee. Therefore, I foresee us saving Luna and the surrounding hillside. Ultimately, though, my goal when I came up here was that if I could not find a way, all of us could not find a way to save this area from destruction, that I wanted to save what Luna stands for. And what Luna stands for is a respect and love for all life, where all species, human and otherwise, live in balance and connection, where we never take more than we give back. And that I feel very blessed to have been a part of.
The program we're all listening to is Like It Is, a radio public affairs presentation. On the phone with me today is Julia Butterfly. She is speaking with us from Luna, and that is a 180-foot tree. Julia, I'd like to ask you, now, the view from above, Julia, I'm interested in. Just share with our audience the view as you look over the environment that you're now above, 180 feet above ground. How is the view? Tell us, just paint a picture for our listeners as to what you see day in and day out as the sun comes up and the sun sets.
Sure, that's an amazing, interesting topic I love to speak with to people about, because I am blessed from where I sit to see everything that we stand for and everything that is trying its best to destroy what we stand for from my perch. When I look out over the valley, I see the Eel River winding its way through the valleys of these incredible mountains and ridges. It leads out into the ocean to the west, where I can see whitecaps on a day like today, where it's absolutely clear and blue and beautiful. I have to look over the Scotia Mill, though. I see the Scotia Mill is the Pacific Lumber Timber Mill, where there's rows upon rows upon rows of ancient trees stacked on top of each other, and these little tree farms around it that they call demonstration forest, yet they forget the fact that a forest is an ecosystem full of diverse life and that a tree farm can never be a forest. I sit right next to the mudslide that destroyed the seven homes. It is a glaring example of what happens when humans forget how to live in balance. And those are some of the things I see that are destructive, along with the massive amounts of brown, burnt clear cuts that dot the hillsides. But above and beyond that, I see the forest that regenerates itself far away in the distance that hasn't been destroyed yet. Areas of green, ancient groves that we're struggling to save, so that future generations can see what this area should look like when it's left to live in harmony and balance with all life. And I see off into the distance onto the east, when I see the sunrise, it's absolutely gorgeous. Many times, because I live in a corridor valley, the fog rolls in off the ocean and covers and blankets the valley below. And when the sun rises and the sun sets above that fog, the fog turns a myriad of colors along with the sky, orange and gold and beautiful reds, absolutely stunning colors that remind me how magical and how incredible creation truly is.
That is quite a picture you paint. Let me ask you, as we move on into our interview, the lessons or the lesson that you'd like listeners to know that you're attempting to achieve here. What is at the root of your opposition? What is it that you'd like listeners to know that the lesson to be in this situation? What is
honestly,
the lesson?
My message is very, very simple. It's all about love. It's about how a creation that is this magical and this beautiful could only have been created in love, and that it's to love to which all life will return, and that out of love is where all good and beautiful and powerful things grow. That's where true balance is found. That's where respect is found and a sanctity for life, human and otherwise. It is about how we're all connected like a web, and over time society has begun ripping the strands, human society, has begun ripping the strands of that web out at an alarming rate and forgetting or refusing to admit the fact that those strands are necessary to keep the balance and the strength of the web intact, and that that web is what gives us life. That now is the time where we remember that connection with all of us, that love is what connects us. And not only do we stop ripping the strands out, but we begin reweaving some back in so that we bring the balance and the strength necessary to keep ourselves alive, that this is about future generations and the legacy that we're going to leave them. Are we going to leave them a legacy of clear cuts and mudslide, poisoned air, poisoned water, complete and total destruction? Or are we going to leave them a legacy of love, where they can look at their neighbor and see respect and see love and see it for our big neighbor, which is the planet that gives us life?
We mentioned about, you mentioned the number of letters of support that you receive and currently are receiving. I'd like to know, when you endeavored on this particular project, what opposition did you face and what opposition do you currently face? I know the lumber company that you mentioned is certainly would be one of the those in opposition, but are there other others in opposition to your effort?
Well, the people and groups that are in opposition to my effort are people that are afraid, because the message of love is something that all people connect with. All people feel it in their heart, that desire of love. So they can't oppose that, but they use me as a symbol to attack, to share, to alleviate their fears and frustration with society. And mostly that's in communities of people that are involved with the extraction industry, of extracting the natural resources that are actually more worth to us left alone in order to give us a healthy and balanced life than destroyed. And over time, though, I've been so blessed to continue sharing this simple message of love and respect, and people are beginning to get it. One of the most beautiful examples actually happened to me yesterday, and some loggers got off work, and they drove their truck up the logging road, which ends right behind my tree. And they stopped and they got out, and I went out to speak to them. And in the beginning, they felt very afraid. And you could tell in their voices and in their words that it was about environmentalists versus the loggers. But by the end of the conversation, they said, "Thank you for talking with us. It is the first time we've ever heard anyone speak like you. We understand what you're saying, and we get it. Thank you. We take our hats off to you." And they actually took their hats off. And I bowed back in respect and love and said, "Thank you from the bottom of my heart for speaking with me, because this is where it starts every time we make a connection." And so it seems to me that every single moment of every single day, the people who are in support, who understand the simple message of love, is raising in amazing amounts. And the fear and the anger and the sadness and frustration that's out there is seeing and feeling the power of love and reaching out towards it.
So when a company says that you are taking jobs from potential loggers and lumber people, you at least feel at this point that you're making a small breakthrough in that particular argument?
Well, most definitely not with the lumber company, of course, because it's their job to spin the lies and manipulations to make people think that it is about environmentalists versus the loggers. But I just counteract that with, you know, the value of our dollar in our society is based on what people decided was of value. But a value of a dollar that is based on something true would be based on our true needs, which is clean air, clean water, clean land, a balanced life. That's what we need. So therefore, the value of their dollar system is based on nothing. And the value, the true value of our life is based on living in balance and respect for all life. And furthermore, Maxam Corporation, when they bought over Pacific Lumber, they doubled the amount of employees because they tripled the rate of cut in the woods. That's not sustainable. If they keep going the way they're going, not only will we not have beautiful forests left, but the loggers won't have any jobs. And that we will both sides will be left in the middle of mudslides and clear cuts, looking at Maxam, knowing that they ripped us off. They ripped us off of a beautiful and healthy life, and they ripped the loggers off of a sustainable way of living. And they will have done that because of their greed.
As we move toward the end of our program, a couple more questions. You are, as I understand it, on private property. How have you been able to maintain your protest on private property?
Well, no. In the beginning, I was considered a trespasser, which the company still likes to claim that I am, except for the fact that the company went forward publicly in print and on television stating that Julia Butterfly Hill is free to come and go as she chooses. And so they basically made it legal for me to be here, although I know that wasn't their intention. And but they did try and get me out. One of the ways they tried was by placing a 24-hour around-the-clock security siege in an effort to cut off my supplies and starve me down. They shone floodlights up into the tree and blew air horns and bugles and shrill whistles and had dogs barking all night long in order to cause sleep deprivation to try and bring me down as well. And those tactics didn't work. They had a helicopter, a twin Chinook propeller helicopter, hover right above my head trying to rip my tarps off and scare me down. That didn't work. So they tried a lot of threatening tactics in the beginning to get me down. When they placed me under security siege, though, 20 beautiful people hiked up this mountain and in a very loving and fun way were able to resupply me because they outnumbered the amount of security. They had many of them carried bags in their hands. Some of them had supplies in it and some of them didn't. And so what they did was we had a number code where I lowered the rope with the bag and all the people would dart to the rope at the same time, and then the ones with the supplies actually clipped it on. And so we were able to outwit their security siege. And those are the ways that we've been able to get around the so-called trespassing issue. And now they've pretty much given up, because the lower they stooped, the worse they made themselves appear.
And Julia, my final question to you, try to describe as best you can just the feeling, the karma, or whatever you'd like to describe it, between you and Luna, this great tree that you find yourself in. What is the relationship now as opposed to maybe 9 or 10 months ago? Is it stronger? Is it weaker? Or is it just about the same?
That's a fantastic question. You know, that our planet and actually our universe has many, many ways of communicating with us. And when we look at another human being and we see their mouth, then we can accept the fact when they speak in a language that we don't understand. But when we look at nature and we don't see a specific human mouth, we think that nature can't communicate with us, but it does. For instance, the mudslide right next to me, that's a communication of the earth saying, please don't destroy me. I can't maintain balance and health if you do that. So in the beginning, it was a learning to become one with nature, learning to shed those chains that had me tied to a technological society that had helped me sever my roots with the love that all life is created from. And over time, such as the instance in that storm that you mentioned before, the trees spoke to me and said, Julia, think of the trees in a storm. They bend and they blow with the wind. They don't try to stand strong and straight, because when they do, they break. Allow yourself to blow and bend with the wind, and that's the only way you're going to make it through. And another experience was when they were logging and the trees were falling down, and I felt myself so overwhelmed with all these negative feelings, and I was hurt, and I wanted to strike out at the loggers and say, no, enough is enough. But I knew that was wrong, and I prayed, and I asked for connection and understanding and the love of the earth, that love that even as we destroy the earth's ability to give us life, it keeps doing its best to give us life anyway. True unconditional love began to fill me up, and I began sharing it with everyone who would listen. And over time, that connection just keeps getting stronger and stronger, to the point now where I understand that every time I open my mouth, I'm not speaking words of Julia Butterfly. I'm speaking my understanding of the message of the universe to us about the connection and the love for all life.
On the telephone, 180 feet above the ground, in Luna, Julia Butterfly Hill has been my guest today on Like It Is. Thank you, Julia, for being a guest today.
Thank you so much. I'm very blessed by it.
I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.